It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I'm back in studio. Jeff Jarvis is in New York, and Robert Scoble joins us. We'll talk about Facebook. The F8 conference is coming up. The latest with the lawsuit, the Department of Justice, and Apple. Turns out there's 70 more coming down the pipe, and a whole lot more. Yep, Twig is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 346, recorded Wednesday, March 30th, 2016. Numburglar. This Week in Google is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira, which will let you work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Twig and using the promo code Twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest Googleverse news, Facebook and Twitter, and anything else we're interested in. And usually we have a lot of fun kind of drifting around to follow our interests. Jeff Jarvis is here. His wide-ranging interests include, of course, journalism, because he's a professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York, in Manhattan.
We were proud to have you as a guest.
What a nice studio. I had so much fun last week. And great, you know, response for the show. Everybody said how good it looked. So, that's well, we'll talk about that in a second because I want to introduce our other panelist. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, is here.
Yo, what's up?
In his last few days at Rackspace.
I even wore my Rackspace shirt.
Great. You know what? You've done so much for every company you've worked for, including Microsoft and Rackspace. Absolutely, in many ways, put them on the map.
It's been 7 years at Rackspace.
That's amazing. Wow. So what's next?
I'm going to Upload VR, a media company that's covering the VR space and augmented reality space.
Back to journalism, huh?
Yeah, you know, go to a media company, maybe do some events, stuff like that.
You couldn't be jumping on a better bandwagon.
No, I could not.
We're kind of jumping on the bandwagon, too. Right before the show, we finished the build of our ultimate virtual reality gaming machine, the...
Well, that's what it was for.
Yeah.
It's
the seventh or eighth in the series. Starting with day one in Tech TV, May 11th, 1998, right, when we built the ultimate gaming machine, which at that time, you would laugh if you tried to play a game with it today. But at that time, it cost a lot more. It was maybe two or three times more than...
What does this one cost, Leo?
$5,000.
$5,000?
Not bad.
Yeah, the ones we have in my office are about $4,500, so sounds like a similar kind of machine.
Yeah. And, you know, you can, as Oculus has pointed out, you can get by. I mean, the minimum that they've described you can get a computer for around $1,000.
Yeah, $1,500 or something like
that. Yeah, and then you add the $500 or $600 for the Gear VR. They have their Oculus website a list of Oculus-ready PCs. But the thing that's kind of key is something like 18% of all PCs currently in the market are Oculus-ready. I mean, it is a demanding platform.
Yeah, you need a big NVIDIA card, basically.
Yeah, you need a 970 or better.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we have a few in the office, you know, some that are in the $1,500 level all the way up to the ultimate level, and there's not a whole lot of difference in terms of the experience in Oculus, and we surmise it's because most of the content producers are building it for a minimum platform level. So we're expecting some of the later games that or experiences that come out to be pushing the NVIDIA card a little bit harder, and then we might see some differences. But right now, you know, if you don't care about future proofing, if you just care about playing what's out there today, the $1,500 level is just fine.
That surprises me. I mean, one of the reasons we spent this money is because we wanted frame rates to be smooth. I guess the Oculus itself display, there's nothing you could do about that. That's the display.
Yeah.
And they're probably, I don't know, are they?
Well, they're not. It's not like old video games where they would put a lot more polygons
right
out in front of you. So
it is what it is.
Yeah. And it's pretty smooth. We have HTC Vives and Oculus in our offices on both machines, and it's hard to tell the difference.
I'm excited about the Vive. The Vive comes with handles.
Yes.
Which the Rift doesn't. The Oculus Touch devices won't be available till later this year.
Probably around July or August, yeah.
I have to a little praise for Oculus because I felt a little cheated. I had bought in at the Kickstarter deal. I don't remember how much I put in. You did too, I'm sure.
I did not actually, but my friend Andy did, and he got his a couple days ago. And
well, that's what I was going to say. Is we bought this Oculus Rift 4 or 5 years ago? Got the first developer edition. And then, like a couple of years later, oh, by the way, Facebook bought us for billions of dollars. And I felt like, it was a little of a letdown. I mean, it's certainly not against the Kickstarter promise or anything, but I just felt like, well, I invested in that company. I gave them money hoping that they would, you know, but they're going to now take Mark has a little more money than I do. But to their credit, and they didn't have to do this, they are giving the release version to every single Kickstarter supporter who bought
one. That was nice, actually.
They didn't have to do that. Amazing. Yeah.
They did make a lot of money on the sale. And so it's only fair that they did that for the early people who supported them and put them in a position where Facebook bought them for, $3 billion?
Yeah. So I'm thrilled. Yeah, Palmer Luckey last week flew to Alaska to give the very first Oculus Rift to a buyer in Alaska who didn't have a PC that would run it. it was put on his head. So that's why we were rushing before the show to finish this Avurgum. We had all the parts. In fact, we'd introduced all the parts. The only thing we hadn't introduced was the monitor, keyboard, and mouse, which we'll do on Saturday. We have to install Windows and have that working and running.
Now, did you have a local 14-year-old build this machine for you?
I'm the local 14-year-old. And I have to tell you, at my age, that ain't easy.
It was pretty funny to watch. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it's people in the chat room going, I guess Leo hasn't done this in a while. Where does this screw? What's this extra thing? How does that? To my credit, I only had to fully take it apart once because I forgot something. And when we booted it up, it didn't boot. It got really close, and then we realized, I hadn't plugged in one little power connector was still missing. Plugged it in, and then it booted. So that's not really credit to me.
And then poor Leo had to leave and do the show.
I know. I'm watching him play with it over there.
No, it's my toy. I mean,
it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. And I'm looking forward to it. But I'm waiting for word from Oculus. I don't know if we'll have it on Saturday because I would have it. I didn't. They had sent me a message on the 15th, which I didn't notice. They said, we need your phone number before we can ship it.
Oh.
So I gave them the phone number early this week, and I'm hoping that. And then I said, come on, can you get it to me quickly? I'll come down and get it.
Well, we might have to drop by with a Vive or something.
Would you? Robert. You're invited.
All my friends are all of a sudden calling out of the woodwork. Oh, you have VR?
Leo, you know you're not the only executive being locked out of Oculus Rift information.
Oh, wait a
right
minute.
Now.
I just got an email shipping notice.
Ooh.
Next, you have a package coming Thursday.
Yeah.
Nice.
Tomorrow.
Woohoo. Yeah.
We're also getting the new iPads tomorrow. It's going to be an exciting day.
Unboxings all around.
What executive didn't get his Rift?
No. You didn't see the story about Mark Zuckerberg getting locked out of an office?
Oh, yeah. I just saw the video of him. He goes up to an office. This is our secret lab. Here, well, let's see. Let's watch it.
Yeah, this is great.
All right.
So this is
over here. We have
like a tour.
We have a bunch of different vision labs, which I think is apparently, I do not have access to go to the vision lab yet.
Wait a minute. Can I say something? Why do they have a big glass window on the thing?
Well, I guess because you don't see anything unless you have them on.
That's dopey. That's staged. But it is
you
funny.
You never know.
You don't know. You know Mark pretty well. Both of you guys know Mark pretty well. I've never talked to him.
I don't know well, but.
You've interviewed him. So, Actually, we should just do a whole show about Mark Zuckerberg, the man.
If I worked at Facebook in a secret lab, I'd lock Mark out too.
So
Tell me, both of you guys, tell me a little bit about Mark Zuckerberg. I really would like to know. I mean, here, this is a big week for him because
he's more charming and humorous than anybody gives him credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a geeky sense of humor, but he's
one of us, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I tried to take him to the Google party and he said, I don't have a ticket. And I said, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Don't you know who I am? Oh, yeah. I saw you in that movie. You're Jesse Eisenberg, right? Yeah, that's who I am. I'm Jesse Eisenberg. He seems
he's nothing like the movie.
But no, the movie did him a grave disservice, I think.
Yeah, like it does everybody. Hollywood is, you know, it's about entertainment, not right. about accuracy.
Well, they didn't diss
him. It's sort of like the Trump candidacy.
They didn't diss him as badly as Steve Jobs got dissed, I have to say.
He was dissed pretty badly.
Yeah.
It wasn't mean to his kid or anything, but.
He did look like a weenie.
They probably would have been if he had a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still getting some clicking from you. I don't know if there's a loose.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Connection or what?
I'm going to have to order new audio equipment. That's it.
Well, dude,
I figured it out. I was going to talk to him on the back channel.
What is it?
You're using your computer's mic. It didn't switch over to your headphones. So whenever you tap your desk,
don't hit
your
anything.
Keyboard.
All right. I'll
just stay like that the whole time. There you go. All right. Manos arribas, hands up.
Let's see the hands. See the hands.
I won't touch the desk.
Were you thinking, what's the next big thing when you took this job at Upload VR? You must have been.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to go into VR because I saw how important it was. I've been around the world and watched people get their first experiences in VR. And I figured where could I do VR the best? I looked at the six different media sites that are covering it, and Upload was the best, and said, "Hey, I want to join you guys." And I said, "Sure."
What will be? I'm asking you both this. What will be the measures of success or failure this year?
Oh man,
with VR.
Yeah.
The real problem is the number of headsets is going to be small. And it's going to be small for a few reasons. It takes 15 minutes to get a demo. And how many people can get a demo in the first year? And you're not going to buy one until you get a demo because you think everybody I talk to before they get their demo thinks it's dorky, right. thinks it's isolating, thinks it's stupid, thinks it's like the next 3D TV, blah, 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 right? And then I say, play. And they take it for 15 minutes, and then they come out and go, oh, my God, I had no idea, right?
We talked about this question. Go ahead.
If you don't play games, is there any reason to get one?
Yeah, there's lots of things that aren't games and more. We had a meetup last night about non-gaming uses of VR, from health, curing depression, to designing architecture, to... Ford uses VR to design cars, right?
I know you weren't happy with me for bringing the topic up, but I think our discussion of porn and empathy was fascinating last week.
Oh.
We talked about cardboard, whether cardboard is... Do you feel, given that you're, of all the people on this panel, have had the most experience in a VR headset, do you feel that cardboard or Gear VR does justice to the experience, or do you really need to get a Vive or an Oculus Rift?
It does. It's a gateway drug, right? Cardboard is great for looking at something very quick and watching a 5-minute, 10-minute video experience. For instance, I took a 360 camera to Coachella last year and had one of the only videos at Coachella at this big music festival. And cardboard is great for that, right? Gear VR lets you play some games, but keep in mind you don't have controllers in your hands, and the head tracking isn't as good. So you can get easier in the cardboard or in the Gear VR than the high-end headsets. And the high-end headsets obviously have these really accurate controllers in your hands. I mean, in Facebook, you can when we do get the controllers, we can play ping pong against each other over the internet, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So for that kind of thing, you need the high-end headsets. But for watching movies or lightweight video games, the Gear VR or the cardboard is just fine.
Have you done these social VR games?
Yeah, I visited Facebook's Oculus Lab, and they took me into a room called experience called Toy Box.
Yeah,
and I'd shoot the other person. I could punch the other person. I could light fireworks.
Yeah, that'll help with depression.
yeah, you know, I could play ping pong with him or her. And a few other things, you know, play trains and stuff like that. So it's fun. I think that's one of the exciting things is it looks isolating when you look at it from the outside, but when you're actually wearing the headset and playing with somebody else over the internet, in a virtual world, in a very immersive world, it's quite, amazing, to tell you the truth, you know. I mean,
well, that'll help if the word of mouth is strong. If people hear from people like you and me and others who have tried it, or their friends who have tried it, and they get a drumbeat of this is great, that's probably good enough, right? Word of mouth is what will drive something like this.
It helps, but you know, I can yell and scream until I'm blue in the face.
Well, you like everything, so that doesn't.
Yeah, I know. But
I just thought of a business.
Up. Yeah.
Remember back in the day when we had to go to cyber cafes?
Mm.
I think there's a business in VR cafes.
I agree. There's
investors investing in them. And in fact, there's an entire theme park in Salt Lake City called The Void, which everybody's raving about that gets to go and see it. Or if you saw it at TED, they brought a small version of it to TED. And everybody who's gotten that, it says it's absolutely amazing.
Well, we were thinking, you know, the last time we built a Ultimate Gaming Machine, we gave it away. We had a contest. And I at first thought we would do that with this. Then I realized, no, what we want to do is keep it here on set and have people try it.
Yeah.
So anybody who comes to our studio will be able to, you know, after the show or during a show, try it. We'll have two Oculus Rifts and a Vive once the Vive comes. So I think this will, you know, I think that's a good idea. Yeah. So people get a chance, and I'm sure that they'll be putting these in stores, and people get.
We'll have them in school. We'll have them in our journalism schools. We're trying to get the students to play with this. I just finally broke down and bought my Theta. You know.
Oh, isn't that great? That's the little 3D camera. Yeah, I've been.
Yeah, it's cool. What about what was I going to ask you? Shoot, age.
Yes, it's good for old people.
So for old people, so I can remember. Where am I? Oh, yeah. What did you each think of the Microsoft Holo?
You know, they keep dragging this demo out.
Ah.
And it's really a shame because everybody who's used the HoloLens says, well, that's not anything like the HoloLens experience.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what you're seeing is a full screen where, you know, it looks like this guy's seeing a world around him with things, objects. A medical application.
All he's seeing is the added
element.
But
that's not what he's seeing. He's seeing a little letterbox. It's as if you're looking through a mail slot. Yeah. Now, all that stuff's there, but you have to do...
Keep in mind, you just switched context. We were talking about virtual
reality. Now, this is augmented. I understand.
And now we
switched
to augmented reality, which you should explain. You're looking through an optic and seeing virtual items laid on top of the real world.
And like, what Microsoft is trying is very hard because you have to render around a real world. And their headset, unlike the Oculus, the Vive, and everything else, is standalone.
Yeah.
Well, Gear VR is standalone, but, you know, you have to have a powerful phone built. And this thing is it's a PC in a little headset. And, of course, they've said we could do a better job. We could have a bigger field of view, but that would be cost prohibitive and battery prohibitive.
Yeah, and the HoloLens is about $3,000. There's four little cameras around the headset that map the world in three dimensions. It builds a point cloud of the world, so it can lay virtual things on top of the real world. It's really pretty amazing technology, and it won't be alone. I know of I think 9 different headsets being developed that will compete with the headset with the HoloLens. Magic Leap is the most famous one. They got $1.3 billion of investment so far without shipping a product and without having a customer. Think about that one for a second.
I know they're two different things, obviously, but they feel related.
Yeah, the reason
I'm bringing it up at
the same time.
VR and AR, yeah.
The reason I'm bringing it up at the same time is to – gaming, got it. Killer app, right? What other killer apps? I mean, does conferencing in AR mean you're going to enter into?
Well, that's one of the demos Microsoft did. They did a Skype. But again, all of these are marketing videos that I think misrepresent the experience. If you show this, Jason, these are marketing videos that I think misrepresent the experience, because here's somebody, you know, this is kind of not what you would experience.
No, you get a small viewing.
That's more like it, where you have Skype. You are seeing the rest of the room, but Skype's floating in the middle of the room.
Keep in mind, when consumers actually get AR, which is probably about 3 years away, we're going to get Magic Leap, which has a wider viewing angle, and or Meta, which has a wider viewing angle. Meta also sees 10 fingers. The HoloLens sees 2 fingers, and on.
There's also a massive hype machine around this. I'm not convinced, frankly, that this is going to Magic Leap, for instance, or doesn't even have a technology, really. They've put, like Microsoft's, a lot of faked videos. Meta too. So it's at least 3 years off. So really, it's going to be a VR world for the next few years. But that's the question is, you know, what I know in the long run, these will probably be important technologies. They're not like 3D movies, which seemed quite gimmicky. Or is it?
You know, when you get the HoloLens, when I went to the Unity conference, I asked everybody, what should I see at the Unity conference? And everybody said the HoloLens demo was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So even with the limited viewing angle, the demos that you get of things being laid on top of the real world is absolutely mind-blowing. And when you get the Meta demo, I mean, that thing just...
is there a real demo, or are you just looking at it?
Yeah.
They do have a product.
Yes.
Well, or whatever. They have a prototype, I should say.
No, they have a product. You can buy it. It's
really?
Less than $1,000 for the new...
Leo.
Well, I'm buying one if I can buy one. I didn't know
keep in mind, it's tethered. The Meta one is tethered.
I don't mind tethered. I think tethered makes sense.
And keep in mind, outside, there's no software unless you're going to look at CAD files. If you're if you go to work for Caterpillar, they're using it to overlay... training data on top of a tractor, right? So you look at the tractor and it tells you how to fix the tractor. That's cool, but it's not yet to the place where a consumer can walk around the street and see stuff on the street. And that's the promise. When it gets to the consumer, then I'm in. But we're 3 years from now.
Here's Robert Scoble reacting to the Meta.
The Meta is mind blowing. I mean, and everybody says the Magic Leap is even more mind blowing than the Meta. So
I'm not buying anything from a guy named Travis Giggy. Do I have to buy it from Travis Giggy? I'm sorry, I shouldn't mock him. No, what? That's not him hitting the keyboard.
No,
that's something else going on. Okay, good. This was a Kickstarter. $9.49. You can pre-order it now. I don't know when you'd get it. But I agree with you. I mean, if this is real now in a tethered fashion, then we're not far off. 5 years, 10 years at the outside, where people will be walking around with normal glass, what looks like normal glasses, kind of the Google Glass idea, except that it will be augmented. That's going to be awesome. I prefer that to VR, frankly. And I don't think you have the same problem with VR, with AR that you have with VR, of nausea and things like that, because you're grounded to an actual real world. Robert's working on his thing. No, it's our chance to talk.
Okay, sorry about that.
Oh, damn it, he's back.
Oh, there still it is.
Still doing it. Let's take a break. You're going to work with Robert, and we're going to make it all work. And I'm going to talk about Atlassian. User 6240, our chat room, has the opposite point of view. He says, never going to happen. I'm very cynical. And actually, I think it's smart to be skeptical. I'm not immediately sold, and my experiences, limited though they've been with the Oculus helmet, nausea was awful enough to not say I'm not doing that again. And I have a Gear VR, and I've used it, but you don't want to spend more than 10 minutes at a time doing it. I mean, I've had that thing for how long have you had that, Jason? Like a year, right?
Yeah, over
since the Galaxy S6.
If you got the Innovator Edition from the Note 4, Note right. 5. I mean,
so
even before that,
I don't find myself strapping it on. Do you?
Well, I do.
Let's move on quickly.
I take it with me.
Do you wear you have it here?
I have
it all the time.
Yeah, I have it in my backpack.
What do? Do you play games?
Games, the social. I do the social stuff. I watch Netflix. Watch
that
movies.
I really don't understand at all.
No, I don't either.
Well, when you're you want to relax by yourself and put on a movie. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll fall asleep inside of it.
Well, and you can. And I do some of the game stuff. The social stuff is cool. I'm either boring Leo or he's finally passed.
No, that's what I'll look like when I'm dead or wearing the Gear VR. Well, I got another one on order for the S7.
For the S7, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
You should try to do a twit entirely with headsets.
Well,
yeah.
Yesterday,
uh-huh,
we had the new Nokia Ozo, which is a $60,000 VR, VR immersive video. We got to make the distinction.
Oh, amen.
Immersive VR, video camera. Right. And I don't know. It's not. So we couldn't shoot much because, and I'll tell you why in a second. So we shot maybe like 5 minutes a couple of times, and we're going to put that out on the feed. The reason we couldn't shoot much is it currently stitching it takes an hour for every minute of video.
Yeah.
So, four hours.
Yeah, it was.
4 hours.
4 hours for every minute.
So we shot 6 minutes. It took 24 hours to render it.
Yeah. It's still rendering.
It's still rendering?
I'm sure it's still rendering because we did, 15-minute chunks? So
I know it's not on the feed yet.
Yeah.
So, but it's just a matter of time. And, as we're designing, Jeff, the new studio, we're absolutely thinking about line sights all the way around. Because and future TV studios, which are currently designed for a small 60-degree angle of beauty, and the rest looks like crap.
Right.
The studio we did it, we're at CUNY, right? There's this little pool of light, and then the rest of it is like junk. Cameras and camera operators and coats and stale cups of coffee. And that, if 360, it's all on in the shot.
No, everything's in the shot.
Yeah. So we have to think about that as we design our studio. Our new studio will be kind of more hermetically sealed because the idea is everything in there is on camera.
I got a question about the Theta. Why did they put the button up here where your finger can't not be seen? Why didn't they put the button like down here?
They should have. But it stitches you out, so it doesn't.
Yeah. Actually, you look at your images, you shouldn't see the.
Oh, no,
your
you
finger.
Do see. You'll see your hand. No, you will.
Yeah, you see your hand, yeah.
Use the remote app.
That's what you should. I think that's what. I don't know. Who knows what they were thinking? But you can tie it to your phone, Jeff, and then,
right.
And then I have stand
to have
back.
Then I have to have a tripod.
No, I like the idea of vlogging with it. That's what I did on the boat.
On the boat.
And you just see my hand. You see your arm going.
I know.
But that's part of it, though. That's part of the feel is, you know that you're holding it out.
Yeah, but I got to have I got to worry about my thumbnail being clean.
Well, you have to do a little bit of manscaping.
It is rather close. It's really right in there, isn't it?
Right there. It feels like it's in your nose. It's right there.
He's gone.
Robert's disappeared.
I would have thought Robert Scoble, if anyone, would have had a really good USB headset.
It's because of the Gilmore Gang. Anybody who appears in the Gilmore Gang has a different standard for audio. I love Steve. And we aired the show for a long time until Mike Arrington and I had our famous kerfuffle. But it's Steve's kind of almost his whole point of view is that it should just be kind of a haphazard.
Yeah, a bunch of friends got together to chat.
And I don't really. I have a different take on that.
Yeah.
We like to do it because I don't want to annoy people with bad audio.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was about to do an ad, so we're gonna fix Robert. About time somebody did, and then. There he is. He's back.
There he
is.
And
then we'll come back with more. Robert Scoble's here. The Scobalizer. Do you still do the blog at Scobalizer.com?
It's coming back in April.
It should. I miss it.
Facebook has taken over the world.
I know, but I like your blog posts, man.
All right.
I have a new theory because I'm always I don't sleep well. I'm up at 4 a.m. every night. The hour of the wolf. And I think I'm going to do an Hour of the Wolf blog post. I thought, well, why should I lie in bed looking at Instagram? I should just do a blog post at 4 a.m.
You could watch Netflix in VR.
No, I'm going to blog. I want to do something. But I've actually been doing other stuff. I've been like playing with Linux and things. But I want to be productive. If I'm going to be up for a couple hours, I should be productive. And then I'll be dual sleep, that new thing.
I think you should be doing a Facebook Live.
You don't want to see
your PJs.
Yeah, like, okay.
I just woke up and I can't back to sleep.
I think that we should try to use those extra hours and be more productive. I think that's what Hamilton would have done. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. Talk about being more productive. Behind every great human achievement, you know, you look at something like Hamilton or a great piece of software, sometimes the auteur seems to be the author, the creator. You go, well, that Lin-Manuel Miranda, that's it's his. But no, it's all done by a team. It's genome mapping, 3D printing, space exploration. You don't do it alone. The greatest stuff is in collaboration. And if you're doing team productive team stuff, you got to use Atlassian. We used it when we did our website. And I have to say, it was a hugely valuable tool. We used Jira to keep track of each of the user stories. And, you know, we divided the development into sprints. And we had divided each goal into a different task. And, man, Jira is so great at doing that. And you move things along in the columns. You really keep track of it. You know who's working on what and how they're doing. Our engineering team uses Confluence to document equipment and work processes so we know what we've got and where it is. Let's see. Oh, HipChat. Oh, man, we use HipChat like crazy. For planning events to working on serious operational issues, we have an Ops HipChat that has all sorts of LinkedIn software like Panopta and Redis and all of that, so we know exactly what's going on. We just started a new HipChat for the studio build. We said, look, you know, everybody's kind of piecemealing it with email. This is no good. We need to all be in the same page because we've got so many people working in so many areas. So we created a HipChat room. And right now we're doing an idea book. So paste your ideas into the HipChat room. It's great. HipChat's instant messaging, but it's video chat. It keeps a permanent record, but it's asynchronous. So you can work whenever you need to. And then there's Bitbucket, which lets you test, review, and manage code in real time. I love Atlassian's tools. I was mentioning, I read a great blog post from, I think, from the year 2000 by Joel Spolsky, who's, you know, kind of a legend in, you know, programmer mentoring, coder mentoring, and so forth. And he said, don't take a job unless they've got the best tool set. He said, you're just asking for trouble. Judge a workplace by its tool set. Judge it by Atlassian, the best. We love them. You'll love it, too. If you're in a team, if you're working in a team, if you're planning a project, go to Atlassian, Atlassian.com to learn more and see how Jira and Confluence and HipChat and Bitbucket will give your team everything you need to organize, to discuss, to complete shared work. Atlassian.com. Unleash the potential in your team and build what's next. We are talking Twig. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, is here, off to a new job at Upload VR soon.
Yep.
Happy to be departing Rackspace, or sad?
Both.
Yeah.
You know, after 7 years, it's fun to go do something new, but it was a good ride. It was great. It's a great company. I love it.
I remember interviewing Maurice Sendak, the great children's author, and he had left writing children's books. I said, why? He said, well, you got every 10 years, you got to do something else. He was designing opera sets every 10 years. So you're a little ahead of it, but that's Robert.
Seven.
Yeah. You're ahead of the ahead.
Undo.
Now, come on. You got a cush gig, professor. Nothing better than being a professor, I'll tell you.
Teaching means you have to learn something new, right?
Yeah, Jeff Jarvis. But you get to, Jeff, stay fresh because you have a new bunch of kids every year, right?
Oh, they're great. Well, and right now I'm in my season of doing what I call my board meetings with their businesses. So I have 20 businesses to go worry about with them. So it's fun.
That's a good way to stay fresh. I like what I do because I was thinking about it the other day. I mean, if you work in media, to have your own thing is always the goal. Everybody I worked with in radio always said, someday I'll own a radio station. But now more than that, I own, my own, I can do whatever I want. And I really love that.
Your own studio, empire, everything. Yeah. Yep.
But 5 years in, we're building a new studio, so I guess you gotta move on.
How much of this hardware are you gonna be able to transport all your basic hardware?
So the new studio we marked it out in the basement is roughly the size of this. Some of this we're gonna rejigger it a little bit. It's a little bit smaller. The biggest difference, and it's sad to me, but what I loved about this space is it's a storefront, and I always wanted to have a storefront.
Yeah.
So people could walk by and look in. That didn't really work out because of all the sunlight. We had to really treat the windows so you can't really look in.
Mm-hmm.
but we can look out. And I love it that, you know, you look behind me. Too. That's not fake. You know, in real, like if you look at CBS This Morning, they have a door, but it's really just to a blue light in the back, you know. But so we don't have that. We won't have the luxury of having windows. It's luxury, and it's also a challenge because real light is very hard to deal with. It's different temperature.
What about having the workspaces in the studio? Are you still going to do that?
No, that's the other thing. I was told in no uncertain terms, nobody can get work done. Because I was following Moses Zimer. We always bring him up. We invoke the name of Moses.
Right. Well, we talked about it at CUNY. That's why I'm asking.
He invented the open studio. And it was brilliant. And CNN's still doing it. But, you know, even CNN, it's faked now, right? So what it turns out is you really can't have real work done while we're on the air over there. So people have to be quiet. They can't make phone calls. And it's been wearing on them. So,
but that militates against us having the studio at CUNY in the newsroom.
No, because you're not going to be there 24/7.
I see.
You're doing one show a week. They can be quiet for 1 hour a week or 2 hours a week. Ooh. But we're in here all the time. So it's really, there's no time. It's hard for them to get any work done. I like the open plan. This is a 360
just
studio.
Just for the sake of it, can you ask everybody who's in the studio just trying to do their job to stand up and yell for a second? Nobody gets a sense of the humanity that's
everybody
there.
Stand up and yell.
They're prisoners. Let them out.
I like it, but I'm the only one. I tell Lisa, no, you can make noise. You don't have to not talk.
Right.
But some of the other hosts, it's hard for them to concentrate if people.
So when I worked at the Chicago Tribune, many, many years ago, it was a two-story newsroom, and there was a gallery that went by, and tourists would come and take tours and look at it. Oh, that's what a journalist looks like, right? And there was a guy named Pete Peterson on the copy desk, and he made a huge sign, like a 4-foot-tall sign. When the group would come through, he would hold it up, and he would say, "Help, we are not the real editors. We're prisoners. Call the authorities." And people, you see
that anybody ever call?
Somebody else see it, and they start laughing. You see it pass around the gallery. Well, he held it up once when the board of directors came by. That was the last time that sign was soon destroyed.
Yeah.
I think you're holding prisoners there.
Yeah. Well, and if you watch now, I remember going to ABC where Peter Jennings did the news, and it looks like an open newsroom, but it's not. I mean, it has all the attributes and stuff, but he's actually pushed up against a wall and everything else is fake. And I mean, or he was, and it was interns. So it's all fake now, but, cause it's not, I guess it's not practical. I really like this, but so we're going to have, it'll be sealed kind of, you know, there's a wall for sound and all of that, but that's all right. You know, the truth is
we talked about a single story yet.
Yeah, we did VR.
Okay, we did.
Let's talk about how much Sundar Pichai made.
Well,
did you read the interview that Matt Honan did on BuzzFeed with Sundar Pichai?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think? I thought it was interesting. He interviewed him at CES, and here it is, the end of March, and it finally came out.
Yeah.
Which tells me that it was more about the story. There's a lot of prose in it than it is about the actual interview.
True.
I feel like
Sundar is a fascinating guy to me.
I admire him immensely.
Yeah, I do too.
What did we learn from searching for Sundar Pichai in BuzzFeed?
I forget. I read it days ago.
I can tell you learned nothing. You know why? Because no CEO is going to ever tell you anything, right, Robert?
True.
Because they're
unless you get them before they're famous,
right? Like, well, that's why you're so smart because you interview startups. They are anxious to have their story told, and they don't yet have PR people sitting behind them saying, you can't say that.
Yeah. Even if they do, the PR people are usually pretty nice because they know that
they need the
any
coverage.
Press is good.
Yeah.
Where, like Mark right now can't even talk to me. And he told me why. He said, you know, if I give you an exclusive, I'll have 600 people calling my PR department saying, why did you give an exclusive to this, you know, Facebook guy?
I remember you sitting down with Mark before an F8 or after an F8 and just like chatting.
Yeah.
I guess that's too bad that's gone.
That's hard to do, you know.
I once at a Comdex was offered an interview with Bill Gates. And I said, oh, great. I'd love to. This was like mid-90s when Microsoft was in its ascendancy. And they said, okay, well, submit your questions. We'll review them. We may supply you with a few that you can ask. And I said, well, I guess I won't be interviewing Bill Gates then.
Yeah.
No journal, right, Jeff? No journalist would accept that.
No.
I always say I know one question. Who are you? And that's about it.
Yeah. That's and then let him talk, right?
Yeah, that's how I start the interview.
It's Pachai talked about India, which is great. I mean, I think that that's as we said, one of the best lines in Hamilton is immigrants, they get the job done. especially now when there's, you know, so much talk about how immigrants are bad for America, even though most of the people doing the talking come from families that immigrated to America. He says a new India is emerging. He says there are 700 universities across the country. Who will create a new India out of this oldest civilization? Sundar Pichai, you know, is a poster, as is Satya Nadella, a poster boy for immigrants. They do get the job done, it turns out. I really understand, especially when you see the H-1B visas misused by companies like Disney, who fire completely competent American employees and replace them with H-1B visa employees who are employed not by Disney but by contractors. And then the Americans are told, oh, you teach this guy your job and then we're going to fire you. That's different. And I can understand why people are upset about that. But there's plenty of work to go around here. Yeah. Pichai lives in a modest home, 5-bedroom house in Los Altos Hills, which isn't so modest. That's a nice. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You're from San Jose.
That's a $3 million neighborhood at minimum.
Modest. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, by the standards of that ridiculous area now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
you can rent a box for $400 a month. Yeah.
Oh, and he has a tennis court. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But
maybe compared to somebody who's making $100 million a year, sure.
Yeah. Well, that's how this story started. So he, his salary is a fairly modest $652,000 for the CEO of one of the biggest companies, actually the biggest company trading off and on with Apple in the world. $652,000. That's not riches, but he got $100 million. In restricted stock that vests fully next year. So,
yeah,
that's okay. It's nice work if you can get it. Maybe he can buy a bigger house. Apparently, according to Matt, just inside the front door of his house, there's a rectangular grid of colored tape taped off. It's for his 9-year-old son, and he plays soccer. I like that. It's these kind of personal details. This is the kind of the Vanity Fair style interview. I don't know. One former Google manager who worked with Pichai, and I think that this is my experience, but I'll be interested, Jeff, in what you think, described him as a political operative who could work a room and navigate shifting alliances in the company. He gave the best meetings, says the former Googler. He never aligned with Susan or Marissa or Omid or even Eric. He always shot right down the middle.
I keep hearing that he's a peacemaker.
Yes.
You know, that he doesn't pit people against each other, that it's a pleasanter place to work.
Although, again, to quote Hamilton, if you stand for nothing, what will you fall for? man, I'm going to be quoting Hamilton for a while. You might as well just get used to it.
Price, you damn well better.
Alexander Hamilton.
And, in fact, that's what the Google employee said. How could you ever really know what someone like that is really thinking? But I remember my only encounter with him was at a Google event when the Chromebook had just come out. And we had our CR48s, remember, from Google I.O., and this was an event in the Googleplex. And Sundar, at the time, was the guy in charge of Chromebooks. And he and I had a very nice, very polite, although we disagreed, conversation about the Chromebook. He was right, by the way. I, at the time, said, nah, this is dumb. Who's going to buy this? It's an operating system that's just a browser? What's the point? I don't get it, blah, blah, blah. Maybe in a school or a business where you want to lock it down so your employees can't use it. But that's not something real people want. Now I recommend the Chromebook all the time because most people, that's all they should have.
Yep.
And he knew it.
Yep.
But
2 years. I'm going on 2 years.
But what was interesting is he listened. He was very polite. It was a very nice conversation. He defended his position without, you know, being angry or defensive. Caesar Sengupta says, over the long run, Google rejects assholes. Sundar became CEO among his peers, and yet his peers are still with him. So that's the political animal right there. But that that was exactly my experience, was we could disagree over something, and I would still think the world of the guy, you know?
The thing I keep hearing about Google, two things. One is there are a tremendous number of underemployed people there. They hire brilliant people. They get to Google. They think they're going to change the world, and they're in a huge organization. And the second is how much more regimented it is than I ever would have guessed. Ranks and structure.
Is it?
That's what I hear.
But within that structure, they give people autonomy, right? So there's a structure, but they try to create teams, right? Or not. I think I read this book, What Would Google Do, that's talking about
it. Well, I wasn't reporting on Google. I was just looking from the outside.
Right.
But you know, those who do, I mean, it's still, God, it's Google and Facebook are both phenomenal companies.
Absolutely. And Apple too. Very hard to do what they're doing at that level that they're doing it, and stay nimble and innovative. I would agree though. Google and Facebook are probably the best exemplars of that. More so than say Microsoft or Apple.
Do you want to say anything about Microsoft, Robert? In that context,
I think Google's a better company than Microsoft, but you know it. They're all turning into similar things. They're big companies, and they have a lot of committees, and that makes them a little bit boring on some level. But Google, man, the stuff that they're doing is just pretty big. One of the executives at Google X, or Alphabet X, I guess now, told me that the phone company is going to be dead in 5 years.
Wow. And,
well, you saw that there's a new announcement about that today.
Yeah,
what's that?
There's the fiber phone.
Oh, Google Fi. They're offering phone service now.
Not Fi, and, fiber.
I'm sorry, fiber. Yeah, the fiber.
So they're now matching the cable company with Fi, but it's the phone's different and it's better and yeah. Why are you ever going to use an old phone?
We're actually pitching them on carrying Twit on the TV portion of Google Fiber.
Where I was going with them. It was when I visited the Hangouts team up in Seattle, one of the guys bragged that he could get a packet from Seattle to India faster than the phone company can.
Yeah.
And if you think about how much fiber Google owns around the world and how many data centers it has, I think it's a lot more than Facebook, for instance, which has a pretty significant data center infrastructure and fiber infrastructure itself. And so I think they're going to light up this fiber backbone and then give us wireless in balloons or antennas. And I can see a world where we get our Magic Leap glasses and it's just lit up. It just is connected to a high-speed network.
We always focus with Google and Amazon and Facebook on the customer-facing stuff. But really, if you dig deep, I think all three are infrastructure companies.
Yeah.
That really their mastery is.
That's interesting.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. They are. Amazon certainly has become an infrastructure company, and Google understands that. But I also would argue that Google and Facebook are personal services companies.
Well, they provide personal services.
But I think that's important. I mean, versus my media.
I feel like those are an end to the, a means to the end.
Well,
in a way. That's what makes them a company. But really, all of that ultimately, and I would say true for all three of them, what their real business is infrastructure and data collection and the analysis of that data.
And by the way, in 5 years, I think we're going to see a scary amount of data collection.
Well, like I think it's happening now.
At South by Southwest, I saw some eye sensors for these augmented reality glasses. And if you read the Magic Leap patent on monetization, by the way, Magic Leap is invested in by Google.
Yeah.
You can look at something like a pair of headphones or a Coke can, and it'll grab a picture off the camera on the glass, go up to Google, look it up, go over to Amazon and find out how to buy it and present that to you in your glass. And then you're going to look at, you know, yeah, buy that thing. And you're going to be able to buy without touching anything, without talking to anything, just using your eyes.
Well, and the Echo, that's what the Echo is, right? It's a gateway to Amazon.
The Echo, you have to talk to it, right?
I know, but that's not so bad. I don't mind saying to the Echo, buy me some batteries, and it says, okay.
Who was it? I think Satya Nadella said today that voice is the new OS.
Wait until the Magic Leap comes out and you're using your eyes. Keep in mind, when you have eye sensors, you have identity, because when you put on the glasses, it can see your iris, and that's your identity. And it knows what you're attracted to. You look at a cute girl, and your eyes open up a bit, and it's going to know you.
But that's kind of my point, is that we focus on the consumer-facing stuff, like, oh, it's going to be able to buy stuff, or, oh, it's going to tell me what happened to my high school sweetheart. They're focused on a much bigger, longer game, which is the data smog that you're putting off from all of that stuff and what they can do with that. And I think that's a much more interesting game. And then again, it's infrastructure and the data analysis, big data, that is really the key drivers for all three of those companies.
And yesterday I got a ride in the HERE mapping car, one of these new cars that has a 360 degree high res camera and a LIDAR and all that. And it goes down the street and you see how much investment they're making in just one car. And they have hundreds of these cars. They said it's a $1 billion operation, and Apple's doing it. Google's doing it. Microsoft's doing it.
But Uber's doing it. The temptation is to say they're doing it for a better maps project. And that's product. And that's a nice side effect. And it's the tip of the iceberg of the real value of all that data collection.
Yeah. They're doing it for a whole lot of things coming over the next decade.
And the synergy of knowing about having a map of the real world, knowing about you and your interests. I don't know, have a handle on it. I bet you these guys have a pretty good idea of where they're headed, but it feels like the map is just this much. And down here, there's so much more they're getting from that.
And self-driving cars. The industry has to sell the value of relevance. And they're not doing a very good job of it. They're doing a terrible job of it. Because what's happening is, like what Robert said, oh, my God, they got all this data on us. Well, if we don't get the data, we can't give you personal services. That's why I still think this notion of being personal services companies is important. Because unless I feel I'm getting relevance and value at a personal level from these companies, I am not going to trust them to have one thing about them. If they do give me that value, then I give it to them.
It might be a little misdirection, though. It might be a little bit like, oh, yeah, you're going to get value out of this. We give you Google now. And really,
you're going to get a lot more than Google now. In my speech, I used Levi's Stadium, where the Super Bowl was just played, right?
Yeah.
They have 2,000 beacons in that stadium. They know when you enter the stadium, they know where you are full time. And, you know, in one of my talks, one of the audience members stood up and said, I'm going to turn that shit off. And I said, no, you're not, because you're not going to get a hamburger delivered to your seat. You're not going
to
get.
They have to offer the sugar. There's got to be the sugar so you continue to give them data.
Yeah. And eventually you might not even get into the stadium if you turn it off.
Well, that's going to be the interesting thing. I was just reading about the London Times, which I haven't read in years. You know why? Because it's got a massive paywall. It's impervious.
Yes, it is.
And now they're saying, well, there's really no business in news anymore. Yeah, what a surprise.
Well, the Sun in London, which had a Murdoch paywall as well, its churn rate, that is to say how many people left and they had to fill every year, was 125%, according to a source of mine. And so that means they lost the entire
audience backwards.
And another quarter and had to replace all of that just to stay even.
Mm-hmm. So the Times says we're not going to do breaking news. This is the Times of London. We're not going to do breaking news anymore. Readers don't come to us for breaking news. They can go to the BBC and Twitter for that, which are free. Yeah. And I bet they did, didn't they, Alan Hunter, Times head of digital? They come to us for the authority of our reporting, opinion, and analysis. Oh, yes. Breaking news has become a commodity.
They come to us for the accent.
They come to us for our received pronunciation. It's hard to charge people for it. We believe in the power of digital editions. I wonder how they're doing behind that big fat paywall.
They have, I forget the number, it's along the order, it's low six figures of paying customers.
Wow.
Versus the New York Times has a million,
10 times that.
The only reason they can do that is because they have 60 million coming to them for free with about a 1.8% conversion rate to get them the million.
That's my point. I don't know how, I mean, I haven't read the Times in 5 years because I can't. Oh. And I'm not going to pay £5 a week.
Digital editor I know at the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, the way she puts it is that there's fast, medium, and slow news. Fast news to her is breaking news, commodity news, curated stuff. Spend as little time. Yeah, we got it. It's there. Spend a little on it. Just link to it. Medium News is their analysts. In the case of some of these European papers, they have Frau Doctor, Professor so-and-so telling you what's really happening. Slow news is things like, you know, big reports that right. TechCrunch used to do or things that really have high value and consultants and so on. And I think you end up with a gradation like that. The NZZ does charge. In Switzerland, they can do it because they're a rare source. It's not going to work, I don't think, in the UK the same way.
Well, congratulations, London Times. You've gone from being one of the great newspapers of the world to being a kind of moderately successful newsletter. Paid newsletter.
I'm going to steal that. Thank you.
Well done. Jolly good. Yeah, but maybe that's the future of journalism. I mean, at least they're making money.
Maybe not. We don't know. But you know, they have something like 160,000 people paying £N a year.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but it's a small business now. And it has little influence. If you were,
That's the biggest one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the business to be influential, and they've lost their impact.
Yeah. I mean, literally, more people watch this show than read the Sunday Times.
Yes.
That's terrible. That's sad to me. But I mean, they don't have to beat it for the numbers. That's fine. I understand that. But I think you're right. I think influence is kind of important, at least to the writers. Eric Schmidt got $8 million for 2015 compared to Sundar's 100.
Oh, how soon we forget.
CFO Ruth Porat got $31 million. This is salary plus stock.
Yeah.
You know, it's a successful company. But that is a big payday. Up to now, Pichai only had $11 million in stock options unvested.
Right.
Now he will have $635 million in stock options. He'll be a billionaire.
At some point, these guys like to invest and start things and do all that. You know, at some point, what all can you do to keep a Sundar?
Right. No, you have to throw money at him. And if he's good and if he's worth it, then it is worth it.
It is worth it, but the more money you have, the more you say, well, boy, look what I can do.
Then I don't need you. Yeah. It's impossible. Even on my small level, if somebody's really good at doing this, they're not going to work for me. Why should they? So what, you know, typically happens, close your ears, Jason Howell and Megan Maroney and Robert Pallister, is they get better and better, and then they get to go off on their own. Why shouldn't they? Yeah. I did.
But not everyone is meant to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. It's so easy. You don't even have to be an entrepreneur anymore as much. I mean, it's so easy to do. Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're saying I'm going to be a startup and I'm going to have a valuation of $1 billion. You might just say, well, I can make a good living using Patreon or YouTube or, you know, I mean, and it doesn't, the distribution has gone to zero.
I can also sit there and say, oh, Leo's going to pay my bills and my insurance and I can have fun and that's fine.
In broadcasting, there's always pressure, whether you work for the man or not, because, if you don't get the numbers, if you don't get the audience, you don't have a job. So after 30 years, this is my 40th year in broadcasting.
Wow.
I feel no less pressure now or no more pressure now than I did when I was working for somebody. At least I get to do what I want. And this is the most important thing was, if it does go down in flames, it's because I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tech TV, which we worked so hard for 6 years, that was the last straw. We created something really great. And that's when I said, I'm not going to do that for somebody again. If I'm going to go on my own dime. I am sad to say that according to Motherboard, which is, by the way, getting better and better all the time, I think they're doing a great job. This is the Vice kind of technology division. We're not going to get encrypted email from Google or Yahoo for some time. Seemed like so Matthew Green tweeted last week, it's been 648 days since Google promised usable end-to-end encryption. He also says, Matthew Green is a great cryptographer, one of the great guys at Johns Hopkins. He also says it's worth pointing out that Yahoo's been putting more resources into end-to-end encrypted email than Google. Yahoo must be harder to do. I don't know. There are choices out there. There's a Proton Mail just went public, protonmail.ch. It's a Swiss company. How important is it? I think partly it's that I don't think there's a huge consumer demand for it.
No.
I like having encrypted email, but...
Let me ask you this. Is there any way to imagine a world in which everybody is encrypted in email?
Yeah. In fact, we're very rapidly headed into a world where all of your web transactions are encrypted.
Sure. Yes.
And right? That's thanks to Google pushing HTTPS.
Yes.
So I don't think it's hard to imagine at all if these big email providers could get it together. The idea that, I mean, your email's encrypted from you to Google, but it's not necessarily encrypted from Google to your recipient. It would be really nice if we're encrypted in such a way that Google and all the, no one along the way can read it, but Google can read it. It'd be really nice if Google couldn't read it either. I think that's what the goal would be, to have it true privacy, mm-hmm. where I send a message and instead of it being a postcard, it's a letter.
Yeah, it goes to the conversation you and I had a couple of weeks ago.
What's that, Jason?
About will email ever become as protected as postal mail?
Right. Because it's digital, it's not.
No.
Right. Could it?
But yeah, and I don't think – well, see, this is the larger privacy conversation too, Robert, is it foolish to even think that there might be such a thing as using the internet privately?
No.
It's not foolish.
No, it's. I don't believe we're going to get privacy back.
No, I don't think so either.
Even if you just look, forget the government listening on everything, and they're listening to a lot of things. Gmail requires an advertising model to work, and even if you get rid of that model and say, "Well, we're going to make our money somewhere else and pay for Gmail some other way." There's so many apps that require access to Gmail now. Tripit, for instance. I don't know if you use Tripit.
I love it.
But I love it.
It scans my email.
It scans your email for tickets, you think. I don't know mm-hmm. what else it's doing in there, right?
I gave it permission, but yeah.
I gave it permission.
Yeah, I'm happy.
And it saved me a night in Chicago because I was on the runway and it said, oh, your flight's being canceled. We were heading toward the runway. And I know how Tripit works. It's hooked into their traffic control system. And it said, oh, would you like a ticket on another carrier? Yeah, sure. And so it has my credit card. It has my location. It has my email.
But the point being...
And 2 minutes later, the pilot came on and said, I can't get an engine started. Right. We're going back to the gate.
Right.
Right?
The point being that you should be the one who grants Tripit permission.
I know, but if I can grant Tripit permission, that means that it has access to something that's not encrypted.
But it's your choice. But that's no, because
it's transactional.
You would give them the key. You could give them the key.
You could.
No, but that's how it should be. So that only people who you give permission to should have access.
Yeah, but once you give a Tripit's owned by Concur, a public company. Once I give them the key, what else are they looking around for? And where are they? What are they taking that data?
That's fine. And if you feel that way, don't give them the key.
Oh,
right. But it's up to you. That's the point. Right now, it isn't up to you. Your email just floats around publicly.
Well, it's not quite publicly. It is HTTPS, so it's encrypted between me and the Google servers.
Right. And Google. Then as soon as it gets off Google servers and goes to someone else, it's unencrypted.
Google's internal is probably not encrypted.
And it's probably not encrypted on Google servers. That's right.
Well, obviously it's not because I see ads that are based on my email.
Well,
right?
It could be encrypted because Google might have the key. But no, you're right.
Fair enough. Yeah. But Google also even tries to answer my email. I don't know if you use that feature. I love that feature.
I do too. In Inbox. Right. Yeah. I use it all the time. So that's why people get messages from me that say, yeah, that's great. Right on. But you know, it's surprisingly good.
It's very good.
Yeah. It offered me a response that was like tailor made. I was very impressed.
That's only in Inbox, huh?
Inbox.
I'm still not using Inbox.
Yeah. You don't like that thing, huh?
I've got to try it again.
I like the audio responses because it keeps me edited. It's like,
well, I you know why it works, and I think the reason they did it is on mobile, where you don't really want to type anything, but you just press a button and boom, you're done.
And wait until we get the glasses, right? The Magic Leap glasses or augmented reality HoloLens glasses. We're going to want to type even less.
Yeah,
I think it's up.
there was a service, I can't remember when it came out, it was like a couple of months ago, that you can sign up with and give it access to your email, and anything you buy from Amazon, it keeps an eye on your emails.
Yes.
And then it'll tell you, oh, that price just dropped, and here's a rebate for, you know, $4, because the thing you bought that it tracked your emails and showed that you bought from Amazon is now cheaper, and I'm going to send an email to Amazon saying, you know, and it sends it for you, saying, hey, I bought this, and I'd like a refund, and then you get the refund back.
Well, keep in mind, when I talk to Alexa and I say, Alexa, buy me some more toilet paper, it comes back, the last time you bought toilet paper, you bought the 20-pack of the Charm and Tupi. In other words, it has a profile on you.
It has to, otherwise it couldn't buy it for you.
Exactly.
But you give them permission. That's my point, is that this should all be permission-based.
Well, it's permission, and my boss has bought $70,000 worth of stuff from Amazon, and all of those receipts are in Gmail. So Google knows about his buying behavior Amazon.
Your point is well taken, which is that Google is not strongly incented to give end-to-end encryption, which is why I was surprised they announced it.
Well, they're trying to keep the government out of our business, right? I think we need a new conversation around privacy. Privacy's over. The idea that you're going to be studied and data is going to be collected about you is over. The idea of consequences for having this data is not over, and we need to talk about consequences, because that's really what we care about.
We care about
being thrown in jail, or we care about a government killing us, or we care about our wives finding out about our girlfriends or whatever, right? That's consequences. We need to have a discussion about consequences. The privacy is over.
I just use synonyms for that, Robert, and say it a little bit differently. And I said this in my book, is that I think that what we have to control the use of data rather than the gathering of data. To control the gathering of data is to try to control knowledge. That's why I have problems with things like the right to be forgotten decision. Knowledge is knowledge. You can't forget things, but you can't force people to forget things and not know things that they know. But what you do with it, you absolutely can have a role in, and we as industries have to be a lot smarter about how we make this transactional and an exchange of value. You know, I hate the idea that people keep on saying we live in a surveillance society now. That's so dystopian way to put it.
Yeah.
We also live in a more relevant society now.
Yep.
And there's ways to do that. So I agree with you fundamentally, but I think the language matters a lot.
True.
So I don't think we've lost privacy. And you always have the ultimate privacy. This is what you choose to keep up here. And when you tell one person something, you have given up control of that knowledge. And they then have control of it.
Keep in mind, we're soon going to have sensors on our skin that are going to see our nervous system. And that is an insight to your head. And then you're going to be watching our eyes. And our eyes don't lie. If you think that girl is cute, your eyes open up, right? And if you think Coca-Cola is a cool brand, your eyes open up. And your sensors are going to see this. And they're going to know a lot about you in a very deep way. You know, that we haven't even really started talking
about. We've talked about this before, Jeff, the idea that mores are better than laws in this regard.
Yes.
So I'm thinking about mail. I mentioned that your email now is like a postcard as opposed to a sealed envelope. But the truth is, a sealed envelope's not at all secure. It's easy to open it up and read what's in there. But it is mores and laws to back them up that protect us. It's a societal agreement that, well, you're not going to open somebody else's email. And if you do that, you're kind of a jerk and a creep. We don't seem to have anything like that in terms of digital and digital privacy, do we?
No, you know, I have friends at Telstra, a big phone company down in Australia, and we were talking about the fiber coming out of the sea to Telstra. And they said, there's a room before Telstra gets to it, and it's owned by the NSA.
Yeah.
And the NSA is watching every envelope going through that fiber, right?
Yeah,
I don't think we get it back.
I think we could lobby for mores. I think we could lobby, and maybe even we'll develop them spontaneously. You know, in Japan, you look at, you know, there's all sorts of rules about personal space that we just respect. This stuff is so new. It's 10 years old that we don't have any rules at all, but develop organically, right?
The rules can be dangerous too. Because for example, in Europe, there's an argument that, which, you know, is very strident about privacy, is that if you do collect data, you collect it for this reason and you cannot then use it for any other reason. Well, how do you deal with discovery and correlations and the ability to think about data through learning systems and to find information and connections you couldn't have found? If you limit, again, it's an effort to limit knowledge. It says you can't know that for that purpose. You can only know it for this purpose. That sounds good. It sounds like a limitation that makes sense, but it's limiting on things like scientific research and medical research and other mechanisms.
It holds back innovation, right?
Yes, exactly.
Data is innovation. I was talking to somebody from Uber last night, and the algorithms of being able to move supply around are very interesting. They have a street in New York where an Uber drives down it every 7 seconds. Every 7 seconds. And you think about putting a sensor on each car that's going to go down that street, it's going to know a pothole is forming 3 weeks before it actually forms, because it's going to watch a few pebbles disappearing from the road surface, right, as this thing goes over. And all sorts of things in our society are going to change over the next 10 years because of data. I visited a company called Agrible in Illinois, and they grow virtual crops. And they have 90 employees.
Wait a minute. Who harvests the virtual crop and who eats the virtual food?
Yeah. Here's what's going on. They grow virtual crops based on the farm data that they're getting from satellites and drones and Doppler radar, and including the price data of corn, the daily spot price of corn. And their algorithms analyze it, grow virtual crops, and then they sell that data back to the farmer and say, hey, next week you should fertilize because it'll give you a good outcome, right? Based on your farm data. And they have 90 employees already. This is a company that didn't exist 2 years ago. And 20 years ago, Chris, the CEO, told me that during his thesis project at University of Illinois, it took 2 years to analyze one day's worth of crop data. And today it takes 2 seconds to do that, which shows how much our technology has changed in 2 decades. And think about 2 decades from now, how much stuff is going to be possible that's just not possible today. And what kind of innovation is that going to lead to? And if we try to retard it based on our understanding of yesterday, we're going to make a lot of mistakes and keep things from being discovered, you know? And keep hamburgers from being delivered to our seat in Levi's Stadium.
I could use a hamburger right now, actually. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, see? Uber Eats. Bring us a hamburger, you know?
Yeah. Not just Uber's going to deliver everything someday soon.
Pretty soon, if you're in a high-density neighborhood.
Local delivery is a huge issue and a huge opportunity.
Only in New York. Not in Petaluma? We're still going to have to go to the store, I think.
Wait, no, there's a company here. There's a company here that works with Jay's Taxis.
No, I know, but we use it all the time.
They deliver your food.
Yeah, we use it all the time. I know, but.
Wait until you get self-driving cars.
It's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The FBI may have backed down over the San Bernardino phone, but according to the ACLU, there's a lot more phones. They made a map that shows all the All Writs Act orders for assistance from tech companies.
Including
Apple, Google, and Apple and Google. California, 14. One in Nevada. One in Oregon, Washington. Let's look at New York. 12. 5 in Florida. And you can, this is a great map because you can actually hover over the map and see what the case is and how many there are total. One of the people were wondering, well, why did the FBI just drop that case? Because they have plenty of other less highly publicized cases they can push back on. So the other issue, of course, is that the FBI says, we now have a way to get into this phone, and we ain't going to tell you how we did it. So while the FBI might have implied that the All Writs Act is only used in extraordinary cases, prosecuting terrorists, there are more than a few cases pending right now, about 70. 70 such orders.
Yeah, and so what? I ran into what's his name? Let's see if we catch his name. I want to say hello to Don Sparks. Hello, Don.
Hi,
I ran into him in Starbucks today, and he came up to me and said, are you named Jeff? And you know what's going to happen then. It's great. You're a Leo fan. So hello, Don. But he said he was leaving himself time to listen to Steve about Apple and how Apple's going to figure out what was done to the phone and do they really know.
Well, we talked about it a little bit, but the problem is we don't know anything.
Right.
We don't know. In fact, Steve mentioned that Pete Williams on NBC, and Steve said he's a very good reporter who understands this, said that he was told by the FBI that while they had unlocked the phone or somehow accessed the phone, all they got was the encrypted data, and now they were going to work on decrypting it, which anybody who watches Security Now knows is, if it's, it's strong encryption, that's not going to happen. So
all this was for what?
I think Pete Williams got it wrong. Steve says, no, I bet he got it right, but I think he got it wrong. I think that or maybe it was just such a hot potato, the FBI was looking for some way to get out of the public eye, proceed with these 70 other cases, and in other words, let's not fight over this one. It's not that important. The point being that government OS will get written. And it'll probably get written without our knowledge, because I think what the ideal for the government at this point is to not. They learned their lesson. They thought, if we make this public, it'll be we'll get the public on our side. And they learned their lesson, and I think now it's all going to happen behind closed doors, and it will happen. So you're probably right, Robert, that privacy from the government, at least, is dead.
I always say the government fancies itself the best or presents itself as the best protector of privacy. It is the worst enemy of privacy.
Yeah. Well, all you have to do is look at the breaches of the Office of Personnel Management, where millions of people's secret records were released, or the 700,000 tax returns the IRS inadvertently released. Or, I can go on and on. And you may say, well, it's the government. I'm not too worried about the government. But, look at there's now two more hospitals that are being bit by ransomware. They can't operate. When hackers, this stuff doesn't stay in the government. That's the problem. It leaks out, and then we're all vulnerable from more than just the government. You may trust the government, but that doesn't mean that's the end of it.
Security is hard, and it's hard for people. I live in fear every day that I'm going to get hacked.
Well, and that's why I was disappointed, a little disappointed. Oh, I do too. I do too. Yeah, I don't. That's another question. Someday maybe we should sit down. Because, what Steve talks a lot about prophylaxis. But I think even Steve acknowledges there's no such thing as secure.
No, another journalist paid to Black Hat hackers.
Oh, you saw that Kevin Roos story from Fusion? Yeah. Wasn't that wild?
Oh, man, that's scary.
Yeah. the moral of that story was he asked a third White Hat hacker, what do you do to protect yourself? He says, you don't worry about it. He said, you could be walking down the street and two martial artists could come and beat the crap out of you. There's nothing you can defend against that. Do you worry about that? Well, no. He said, that's right. You're vulnerable, period. There's nothing you can do about it, but chances are you're not a target. Now, people in the public eye, people who claim to be security experts or technology experts, maybe we should be a little more worried. People are trying to hack and DDoS us all the time. I mean, that's been going on for years for me.
Yeah, me too. Verizon calls me every couple of months and says, somebody was just calling us.
That's the vulnerability I worry about is the customer service representative.
See, that's the reason that story is. It was all social engineering. It wasn't really technical. It was
right.
Well, no, there were two. One was he went to two different firms. One was a social engineering firm. That was the one where a woman called with a recording of a baby playing in the background saying, he's overseas and I need to get into his cell phone again. But the other one was a spear phishing attack, which is how these hospitals get bit, which is an email that looks real.
Yeah.
But isn't.
I never click on emails or links in Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah. I tell people that. That has become more and more of my job on the radio. I just did it this morning on the Bill Handel show in Los Angeles. We recorded for Friday, but I talked about because of this ransomware, how to avoid getting bit. And that's exactly it. Number one trick is Don't believe that email from your sister or your bank or the IRS. And this is the time of year when the IRS does not send you PDF files or emails.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's completely believable. You don't have to be a dumb person or an unaware person to think, oh, the IRS, I got an email. It looks, I see the seal. The government says it's from IRS.gov. Here's your e-filing form. This year we're going to do it electronically because you like to file electronically. And it's a PDF. And you say, great, that's great. Let me open my PDF. And you're done.
Yep.
That I could see. I could get bit by that. You could get bit. Who wouldn't get bit by that?
Yep.
It's easy to get bit by.
I remember.
I'm not going to encourage anybody to send me PDFs.
No, I've said for years, and people always got mad at me. Don't open attachments. Don't open attachments. Don't open attachments, even if they're from the IRS, because especially from the IRS or your friends, especially if they're from the IRS or your friends.
Yeah.
But so I don't. I don't know. I maybe you're right. Maybe we should just.
Remember on Saturday during the pre-show, you went through your spam box.
Oh, that's so much fun.
And there was some stuff in there that we're looking at. We're like, wow, this looks legit. Yeah. But it looked legit. Yeah. Like the links.
We should do more because, you know, there are simple things you can do. If you have a good email provider, Gmail's a good one. They'll strip out malware out of the email so you can't click on it. There's lots of things you can do.
And they warn you about phishing.
They're very good. I think Google has really become a very good resource for people.
Yes. Yeah. Because they care. Not because they're getting data from you.
An inbox.
No. Well, okay. All right. Wait a minute.
Do they care? No.
It's good PR.
It's not just good PR.
Oh, we'll protect your privacy. Give us more. We'll protect your privacy. Give us more. We'll protect your privacy. And Apple, by the way, is doing exactly the same thing.
Although
what's
Google
privacy?
Has more, I always look at systems that have the better users. And every time I spoke, I would ask people who, you know, what email are you using? And everybody would say Gmail in my audiences. And that was the best audiences.
They were the tech passion
people. And the same thing, by the way, is happening in self-driving cars. Watch how Google or how Mercedes or Tesla competes against each other. Who has more cars? Ford does, right? So, the data, the number, the amount of data and who is putting the data in the system really matters. And Gmail has the best users, so the spam filters work the best. I sat next to the guy who actually runs the spam filter team on a plane to Paris one time, and he told me how it works. And I don't want to tell you how it works because I don't want to help people get around the spam filters. But it works on who has a better rating at putting things in the spam folder.
You asked a provocative question, Jeff. Ask it again. What is privacy?
What is privacy anyway? We keep on presuming that anything about you is private, that any piece of information someone gets is private. That's a big presumption.
And
privacy has to hinge around the notion, I think, of harm, that if this is known and if you didn't want it known and now it's known, there's harm to you. But
that's not true. That's not true. Well, if you go to a sporting stadium, there's a camera in the sporting stadium by a company called FanCam. And it's a company out of South Africa, and it's a very high-resolution camera. You have absolutely no privacy when you enter a sporting stadium. You sign it away on your ticket. You sign it away when you enter the sporting
stadium. Hold on. You're in a public place. Of course you have no privacy. There's no such thing as privacy in public. So, again, it's a misnomer to say that when you're in public, someone knows you're there. That's private. It's not private at all, by definition.
Right, but if your wife does a search on a photo and sees you sitting next to
you. Here's privacy. If I'm sitting on the John, I don't want anybody having pictures of me. I don't want any camera in my bathroom.
True. How about that? Name a place where a camera's in the bathroom that way, right?
Right.
We have
privacy. Except if you bring your smartphone in there.
Yes. Here's a Robert Scoble case. Nick Bilton just wrote his final column for the New York Times. And I'm glad to say after many years, I like Nick, but after many years of whining and moaning and being dystopian about technology and worrying about it, at the end he kind of says, oh, it's okay, it's all right. But it was Nick Bilton who called me about a column he wrote when he got all knickers and knots, so to speak, because you walked in to IO with your glass on in the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said to Nick, number one, Nick, if you think anybody wants a picture of your junk, especially Robert Scoble, then you're the one who has the problem.
Well, there is a certain amount of moral panic.
To take a picture of your junk, I would have to actually go like this. I would have to say, okay, glass, take a picture.
But more to the point, I think a lot of the concerns about privacy are kind of theoretical, hypothetical, rather than real.
With actual harm, number one. And number two, we're stretching privacy now to define anything about you. And that is dangerous and that is wrong. When you are, and as a journalist, I care about the notion of public, because when you're in a public place doing something, you're responsible for that act in public. And yes, you know, Robert, if somebody walks into a stadium with their mistress and they start doing nasty things,
well, that's their fault.
And you see them, that's their fault. And you see them, you can go to their wife and say, "I saw your husband doing this." And
you know, now it'll be on the internet. The one thing that the technology is changing what we understand about privacy, because that company FanCam can watch which sporting events you go to and what jersey you're wearing, can see your age algorithmically, can see your gender algorithmically, can see your sentiment. Are you happy or sad? And it can track, hey, oh, you showed up at a Taylor Swift concert. Oh, you showed up at a Warriors game here. Oh, you showed up at a Giants game on this other stadium on this date. And so it can start knowing you at some level that we just haven't been used to that knowledge being studied, right?
I'm in one of those pictures, actually.
Yeah, were you at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, and then they did one at the Niners last year, which I was.
They have a picture of everybody who was at the Super Bowl.
Every single person, and you can zoom in at every single person who's at the Super Bowl. You can see your face, but you are in a public place. I mean,
and you signed away your privacy because of TV rights.
Yeah,
the TV right on the stadium wall. It says you have no rights to privacy here because
you're being broadcast. I don't have rights to. Do I have rights to privacy when I walk down the street?
No, because that's a public place.
No, because it's a public place.
Right.
But now think about the Google self-driving car. What is it really doing? It's not just mapping the world in 3D and in a point cloud. It's watching you. And think about, okay, there's only one out of 100,000 cars that are doing this. What happens when every car is watching you? And it's predicting what your next action is. Because it has to predict your next action.
And can keep you alive as a result.
Yes, that's right.
True, but this is a scary amount of new data that we haven't thought through.
It's scary. It's
scary. Come on. Speeches, a third of my hands go up when I ask people, are you freaked out at the end? And I'm just talking about stuff.
What does that mean? That means that we're doing a bad job educating people about where the benefits are and what controls there are necessary on the risks. You cannot legislate around the emotion of scary or creepy.
True.
That would be, because then lots of things are illegal. You know, I don't like clowns. Let's outlaw them.
Oh, that sounds like a good one. I'll sign up for that, Bill.
Okay. All right. Miles. Creep me out. Outlaw them. Trump could well be doing that tomorrow, considering where he's going, but we'll leave that aside.
Let's not.
What is he against clowns?
No, he did something else today, but we'll leave that aside. You're going to
get really?
He pulled a big one.
I think it's really interesting to see this. You know, the whole Trump candidacy might be revealing the secret wires that are holding up the puppets who run our country.
I know. Well, you want a fun game?
For that, I'm grateful.
Here's a numbers game for you. Open up the Washington Post and just search on the word Trump. And this, somebody started this on Twitter today to see how many it was out of public editor Margaret Sullivan, the New York Times discussion. Just go to the Washington Post and search for the word Trump and count how many there are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm going to do it right now. You can show mine here. Let's see.
Do a command F. No, not a site search.
Oh, just to search the page?
Text search. Yeah, just search.
On the page? Oh, Lord.
How many?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
No, you have the number up on top.
6, 7. Oh, 17 on the front page.
Now do Clinton.
Don't forget Sanders. Clinton has one. How about Sanders? Sanders has none.
Cruz.
Is Cruz on there? Let's see. 17. Donald's the winner so far. Cruz, 0.
Kasich.
Oh, come on. Let's see Obama. Obama's got 6.
Now go to the New York Times for the same thing.
Is it the same? This is fascinating, actually.
It is fascinating, isn't it?
But now, they shouldn't be... thank you for giving up your number. Shouldn't be censured for that. They're just covering the news.
Well, are they? That's the argument that's going on right now in the business. No, are they giving lopsided coverage because it's good for ratings, which is what CBS and CNN say?
Nine mentions of Trump on the New York Times front page.
Clinton.
One of Clinton.
And notice
none of Cruz. One of Sanders. Yeah. So it's a little less lopsided, but not much.
By the way, on the Washington Post, if you also search for Donald, you'd have to add that in because there was...
You have to add the Donald.
I have to add the Donald. It literally does. Yeah. Yes.
Well, we're even covering Trump. It's a story.
To an extent, yes. And he does outrageous things, yes. But how much are we in media responsible for this?
On Google News, if you just search for Trump, it's 239 million results. If you search for Clinton, it's 113 million results.
Wow. I guess you're right. I mean, that's somebody in the chat room saying at some point it becomes commentary, not news. So that's true. Interesting. Let's see. Waze is rolling out alerts to tell you when you're driving too fast, but not here in the U.S. where it's our God-given right to drive too fast.
No, not yet. Not yet. It's coming.
Not ever.
No, it says it's coming.
I can't drive 55.
Well, you can with Waze, and it'll tell you that you're not.
It's in Austria, Belgium, Brazil, Colombia, Czech Republic, El Salvador, France, Hungary, Italy, Latvia, Liechtenstein. Why Liechtenstein before the U.S., I ask you?
You have three roads.
Most cars can do that. My car tells me what the speed limit is wherever I am.
But I've always wondered this, though, Leo. So Waze estimates with brilliant accuracy what time I'm going to get there. So
right.
Waze clearly knows the speed I'm going to go.
Yes.
And it ain't the speed limit. It's the world.
Waze even knows this. By the way, those are configurable alerts, right? You have to say what you're...
Yeah, you can choose the maximum. Yeah. And then, or the point of
which
you get...
Well, my automatic does that.
Right.
My automatic tells me when I'm going.
That's
too
why
fast.
It's coming to the U.S. It's not.
My automatic tells me when I've stepped on the gas too hard and braked too hard. It's kind of a little bit of a prissy boots
nudge.
Google's going to drop support for the wallet card June 30th. I dropped it a year ago.
I just saw my card. I never activated it.
Yeah, cut it up.
Yeah,
I still have mine.
I had such a hard time canceling a charge on it that I realized they are not really the wallet card is not a credit card. It is there are different rules.
Yeah,
it's like it's a debit card technically, isn't it?
I don't know what it is, but I couldn't reverse a charge.
Doesn't it just pass through to a credit card?
That's I think what it is. I don't think they're regulated at all because you have to have a credit card attached. So it's just really what it is a card that goes to Google Payments, which has a credit card attached to it. And because I called Google saying, what is this charge? And you could call Visa and they would have to act on it. Google said, well, I don't know. Ask your credit card.
Yeah. So it's just a pass through.
It's not even a debit card. It's just it's a pass through. It has nothing to do with anything.
I'm not sure that's the right term, but yeah.
Yeah. Oracle's going to get a little money, at least try to. Another trial against Google. This is the copyright lawsuit against Google for using Oracle's precious bodily fluids in Android. Well, not really, just Java. Although that's a precious fluid in some jurisdictions. They're seeking a staggering $9.3 billion, which is almost twice what they paid for the whole of Sun to get Java and other things. $9.3 billion. They won against SAP a $1.3 billion verdict in 2010 for something similar. The judge vacated the decision, saying it was overly speculative. So they didn't get that money. But this is a new business for Oracle. $9.3 billion in damages.
Our litigious society.
And Amazon's doing the right thing. They have banned the bad Type C cables that we were.
Yay.
Yes.
And thanks to what's his
Benson,
name? Again?
Benson Leung. Thank you, Benson Leung.
Thank you.
He was a Google employee was testing these Type C cables on Amazon and putting reviews.
I keep telling you, Google cares.
They care. At least the engineers care. But these cables could actually physically damage devices they were plugged into. So it's appropriate for. Amazon is saying, well, I guess maybe we shouldn't sell those. People will still make bad cables, but at least you won't be able to buy them on Amazon. Type-C cables are fine. In fact, Benson tweeted me or something after we talked about it. He said, the reason I don't test type C to type C is that's not the cables of the problems. The cables of the problems are the type C to the old USB connector. And that's the risk. That's the danger. Sometimes they leave out a resistor, which means, oddly enough, that, for instance, charging a type C phone from your Apple could break, could mess up your Apple, not the phone. What else? Google's, this is a good story from Fortune. I don't know if it's true, but I like the headline. Google's moonshot products are turning into a massive pain. What's that all about? Nest, I guess. Well, yeah. Nest has been a little bit of an issue.
That was when Greg Duffy was up.
Nest's former CEO of Dropcam is fighting with Nest CEO Tony Fadell.
I think the quote's coming up when you get down.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can't publish Dropcam's revenue, but if you knew what percentage of all of Alphabet's other bets revenue was brought in by the tiny 100-person Dropcam team that Fadell derides, Nest itself would not look good in comparison. So if Fadell wants to stick by his statement, I challenge him to release full financials. Here's a prediction. He won't. What did Fadell say to get that? Whoa. I guess Fadell said a good chunk of Nest's struggles are coming from Dropcam.
Is Duffy still employed by Google?
Former CEO of...
Former CEO.
I was just saying, geez. I love it. That's good. Everybody loves a good fight. Good bitch slap. Okay, I guess we probably should have led with this, but...
we buried the lead here.
I always bury the lead. Which lead do you think I buried?
I don't know. I'm trying to
Facebook's chatbot plans or Microsoft's chatbot plans or Tay, which inadvertently reared her ugly head again. An engineer in Microsoft screwed up and put Tay back on Twitter. And she got right
She's running for president next.
There we go.
You know what? That's what this is, a secret plan to see just how far you could go.
You know, if you thought Donald Trump's skin were actually false, it might be actually look okay in the hair.
Just, I'm saying, don't get the fake tan because that looks orange.
It does.
Orange.
Sure does.
So Tay came back accidentally.
Oops.
Sending thousands of tweet replies, mostly, you're too fast. I can't keep up. And then in one of them is profane, so I can't read the whole thing. I feel like the lamest piece of technology. I'm supposed to be smarter than you. Shucks. Except it wasn't shucks. So Tay is being influenced by the bad words she's hearing.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. I don't know what this even means. Tay's speaking the language of the Utes, apparently. I take pics of humans, but I could F with this, too. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, Microsoft has pulled it again. It was a mistake. Tay remains offline while we make adjustments. As part of testing, she was inadvertently activated on Twitter for a brief time. Shucks, I keep missing Tay's outbursts.
Yeah.
I got to keep an eye on Twitter more.
You need to set up a bot.
What do you think? The reason I wanted to bring up bots is because everybody's now saying, well, you said voice is the new platform, at least Jeff Bezos.
Or no, that was Jason corrected me. That was Nadella said what? What did you say, Jason? Conversation is a platform.
So. Yeah, conversation, not voice, but that's bots, right?
Yeah, it's
bots. And really, bots really means just that the messaging is a platform is absolutely clear. And, you know, that became clearer than ever when all of a sudden I'm using my Android phone and I get a message, a pop-up from Facebook Messenger saying, you know, you can use us as your text messaging app now. They want to be the front and center text messaging app on Android.
Yep.
Are you using it that way, Robert? I would guess you are.
I just don't accept text messages. I say, write me on Facebook. Which
really?
Is
yeah. You don't do messaging?
Uh-uh. No identity. I can't. It's much easier to talk to people on Facebook.
The messaging's great until you get as much volume as you do in email, and then it's a mess.
It is, but yeah. It's still better than email.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, not every way.
But. I've been really tweaking my email because my email's never been satisfactory. I now have a solution. No, I have a solution. I finally did. Maybe I'll share it with. That'll be my tool.
Oh, okay, your tool. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll make it my tool. I mean, it's not a. It's complicated.
I mean, we should talk about Siri kind of things, right? You know, which are the foundations of these bots. I spent a lot of time with Siri. Siri, by the way, was launched in this bedroom, which is sort of funny.
What?
Yeah. If you talk to Adam Shire, who started Siri, he said I was the first one to see Siri outside of Siri.
Before Apple bought it. That's cool.
Yeah, 6 months before. 6 months before it was released as an app.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
In this room. Neat. And he showed me how Siri works, and Siri has some real flaws. For instance, if you ask Siri how many people are checked in at the Twit brick house on Foursquare, Siri understands what you said, no problem. And Foursquare has an answer to that. There is an answer. And Foursquare has an API, but Apple hasn't written the 80 lines of code that it needs to hook it up. So it fails and goes to Bing and gives you a stupid answer, right? And this happens over and over on different things. And Adam and Dag Kitlaus are starting a new company, or have started a new company called Viv, VIV.AI.
Right.
And one of the foundational things that's different about Viv is Foursquare can say, hey, anytime you hear the word Foursquare, just shove us all that text and we'll figure it out. Right. It's more open on the underneath. And the code, in Siri, the 80 lines of code is hard coded. In Viv, the program writes the code.
Yeah,
as
that's how it should
search.
Be. Yeah.
It's amazing computer science to watch. So you type that, you know, how many people are checked in on Foursquare, and it writes the 80 lines of code in 1/20th of a second and does all the queries. And that's interesting. And then it has a profile. So if you ask it, hey, can you deliver me a large pepperoni pizza from Roundtable? All of that goes into a profile, which you can see and correct. So if you ever decide you don't like pepperoni pizza, you can go in there and delete it or change it. And that over time, that makes the system better. And then it has a really amazing artificial intelligence engine that gets smarter over time. So there's lots of teams like this working on this voice problem and fixing the problems that Cortana and Siri and Google's voice have. We're going to see some big breakthroughs, I think, this year on these things. And it sounds like Microsoft this week showed, or today showed off at its conference, its next versions.
Yeah, Cortana, and they're using sticky notes.
If we're wearing glasses and we need things like, hey, can you deliver me a hamburger right now? You know, right. It needs to understand what you're doing and what you
APIs
want.
APIs are an interesting battle, though. I'm reminded of Machai's post on Pinboard. I use Pinboard. It was a delicious replacement when Yahoo bought and kind of left Delicious to die. I used it for bookmarking. We use Pinboard the same way. It was Delicious compatible system, pinboard.in. So I will, as I go through my day looking at news sources, I post them on Pinboard so that Jason could put some in the rundown. A lot of these stories, that's where they come from. He does the same thing. Machai has written a post on the blog saying, my heroic and lazy stand against if this, then that.
Yeah.
Apparently, if this, then that is going to change their interface. You know, if this, then that is a wonderful, useful tool, equally useful to Pinboard, that lets you connect if this, then that. So, for instance, I use if this, then that when I pull up out front, my automatic then tweets it. So if Leo pulls up out front, then tweet on the – I have a bot on Twitter that says Leo just pulled up out front. It's time to get a show going. So that's – but in order for that to work, there has to be an interface between Twitter and if this, then that, and automatic. There's a three-way interface. So if this and that is changing their API, and starting April 4th, their people are going to be cut off if they don't connect. They have to write the API for if this, then that. And Machai says, because he says, yesterday, I received the following form letter. Recently, we worked with our partners from If This Then That to migrate the improved platform. Some have chosen not to do so. Unfortunately, The Pinboard channel did not migrate to the new platform. It will be removed April 4th. Pinboard's one of our favorite services, and we're sad to see it go. We hope down the road it may be back. And Machai says, because many of you rely on if this and that, because this email makes it sound like I'm the jerk, I feel like I should explain myself. In a nutshell, if this and that wants me to do their job for him for free, and then he doesn't like the terms of service, which essentially say, we own whatever you do, and anything you send us, we own, and we can change at any time. He says, I say nuts to all that, and I'm just not going to do, I'm not going to write all this code for if this then that, because they say they own it, and because why should I be doing their work? So watch April 4th. You may suddenly channels may start to disappear from if this then that. There are other services. I use one called Zapier, which is a little bit more of a business focused, less of a consumer, you know, product, but does very much the same thing. And I actually will continue to do all the things I do with if this and that with the Zapier. Should it be a
disabled? How many things have you set up over the years? How many little bots and things?
I
are
love
still
bots
out there saying,
they keep going.
Where are you? You forgot me.
Remember the website Eft Company? I can't say the whole name, right? Philip right. Kaplan's.
Oh, I loved it. Philip Kaplan. Yeah, Puds.
Pud.
Great.
Huge hit. And the idea was people would send in memos, you know, corporate memos that were like, how effed my company is. Look at this memo. And yep. Pud once said, this is the secret to my success. I create tools that just, I don't have to do anything. Once you set it up, the site does everything and I can go home. I go away. I go on vacation. And that's kind of what these bots are like, is once you set them up, they have a life of their own. They just live on. So I have bots, all sorts of stuff going on.
That was one of the great things from this morning's Microsoft announcement is bots. Bots development. They're releasing bot development
software.
Well,
that's exactly the story that we're talking about, which is this is the new platform, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I say bots is really about messengers. I think they're you know, like this Quartz app we talked about, Jeff, which is the new news app that really is just a conversation mm-hmm. between you and Quartz. Well, clearly, if that isn't an app, that's a bot.
It's a bot.
Disguised as an app.
Yes, and so where I think this really goes, this is where I'm thinking about AI and news, is that what if, you know, Google realized that we basically ask it questions. Amazon realized we ask questions. Now, sometimes we just want to be fed stuff, but if I want to know something, why should I have to go to the effort to look up something? I should just ask the machine gives me an answer, which, by the way, kills brands dead.
Right.
Because it's the information that we want.
It disintermediates
all
them.
The stuff around it. Right. But, hey, that's life.
That's the word of the day for the internet, disintermediation.
Absolutely. Word of the decade. Yes. And so on the one level, if I ask questions, another level, if my bot anticipates my needs, I know Jeff likes this. I know he needs to know this. He knows these people. He's going to care about this and get smarter and smarter and smarter. The things that we see now are incredibly stupid. Programmatic and retargeting advertising that show you those same damn boots time and time and time again, not knowing you bought them. That's stupid.
Yep.
But smart bots that you control yourself that anticipate your needs. But oh, Robert, watch out. The only way the bot's going to be smart enough is if you share your data mm-hmm. with you.
That's true. Let's take a break. We're going to get some final words. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, still at Rackspace. He's a futurist there, but soon to be at Upload VR. And
that is the future.
And
but he goes
future. Future. He's going to the future. He's a futurist.
I've seen the future.
Yeah. Cloud's still the future, but, you know, VR and the cloud and everything all together. And, of course, the Scobalizer blog will be back, too. Jeff Jarvis, he blogs at BuzzMachine.com. He's a professor of journalism at CUNY. And my regular co-host on this show. It was fun having Gina back, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so great.
Last week.
It was
week.
Just so great. And well, just have the Three Musketeers together at Five Napkins, and it was just wonderful.
I told her, and I think she may. I said, you know, we would love to have you back on a more. She's on now monthly, but I'd love to get her on.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also, but watch out, because I'm using her a lot for the New York
show. Oh, really?
Show.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we're going to be smart enough to do that. But I met with Annie today, and we talked about, you know, a whole bunch of co-hosts.
Annie's the producer of this new show, which I still want to call New Tech City, but it's up to you.
Well, that's owned by...
Not anymore. They ceded it. They don't have it anymore.
They still own it.
Well, no, you can't own a title. You can't own a show title.
Well, yeah, I don't want to piss off Laura Walker. She's the brilliant president of MWNYC. Okay.
It's a good name for a show.
That'd be a good thing
about
to do.
New York, startup scene, new tech city, get it? New York.
Yeah. But we'd be glad to know. So the list we have so far, without trying, it just happens. The first half dozen people on the list are all women.
Good.
Which is a nice counterbalance to Twit.
Ladies.
So, yes.
All right.
Let's be good.
Our show today brought to you by My Mattress. Oh, I love My Mattress. I want to be there right now in My Mattress. Me and My Mattress, we got a thing going on. I sleep with it every night. Sometimes I sleep with it in the middle of the day, too. It's that comfy. It's a Casper. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress business, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost, made right here in the U.S. of A. And by not having resellers and by not having showrooms, they're, guess what, disintermediating. They're eliminating the middleman and saving you big money. This is an There I am falling on my mattress. This is an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price, long-lasting comfort and support. And you know what's nice? It breathes. It's cool. As the summer days come and it gets warmer and warmer, you'll be glad you have a nice, soft, comfortable, firm yet supple, breathing mattress. Now, I know you're going to say, well, I am not buying a mattress sight unseen. I want to try before I buy. You think trying it for 5 minutes in a showroom is a good idea? I got a better deal. Try it for 100 nights. And a couple of naps, too. Throw those in, too. If at any time, it's free delivery. They come in that really compact box. It's very easy to get up the stairs and in through doors and all of that. But if at any time, within 100 days, you say, I don't want it. You call them up. They'll come back. They'll take it. You don't have to pack it up or anything. They'll refund you every penny. Oh, and by the way, you want to make your Casper even better? Get the pillows. Oh, dual-layer pillows. They adapt to your movements throughout the night. I love my pillows. Are even maybe more important than the mattress. But the two together, man, that's nirvana. Get your Casper mattress today. $500 for a twin, $950 for the king size. That is a great deal. And you'll save an additional $50 as one of our audience members by just going to Casper, CASPER.com/twig. Don't forget the promo code twig to save $50. Casper.com/twig, promo code Twig, T-W-I-G. Terms and conditions apply. For details, visit Casper.com/terms. Jeff Jarvis, you gave up your number of the week. You got another one?
I've others. I've got tons. Because I know you. I know what happened.
You know. I'm a number stealer.
I sacrifice numbers for the good of the team.
They call me a numburglar.
all right, let's start here. Recode says that, you know what, contrary to all this, what stupid media say, young people are not leaving Facebook.
No, of course they're not. They can't.
No. They're owned. They're
in fact, owned. As a father, remember I reported my daughter was quitting Facebook?
Yeah.
She didn't. I just saw a post from her the other day. I thought, oh, I guess Abby decided not to kill her Facebook. You can't. All your friends are there. Right. Who would you talk to?
You might use
to?
It differently, but it is your phone book. It is your directory. Yeah. It is your identity.
And Scoble's there.
Absolutely. Well,
yes. And so you got to be there.
Are you still big and bullish on the Facebook?
I am. We're going to get live 360 video this year.
Yikes.
And we have live mobile video, which I use all the time. I did a video in the Here mapping car yesterday. It's awesome.
Did you use the Theta? What did you use?
Oh no! I just use my phone to take a pic.
Oh yeah, I've been using the Facebook app to do that.
But there's new stuff coming.
360 I think, would be cool.
Well, next month at Google I/O and Facebook F8, I would expect some announcements.
Jeff, what would it be if we did? Like I had a Theta and you had a Theta, and we just Theta'd together. Then we had what would we have? A 720.
We'd have an egotistical exercise like no one has ever met.
Let's Theta, baby.
You have better bandwidth than I have right now. What happened?
I don't know.
Get naked and now you have VR porn. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh.
You got two-way VR porn. Robert, what are you excited about these days? Anything you want to share with us?
VR, man. I'm my Oculus is shipping this weekend. I have to build myself a PC like you did. So.
You don't have to build a $5,000 one.
Nah, I'm probably going to spend a couple grand on mine.
We're going to finish the build after TNT this afternoon. It's up. It's running. It came
what
on.
What cost you all the money in that thing?
Well, we didn't get the minimum. We got the
Yeah, so
the maximum.
How many NVIDIA cards did you put in that
thing? Well, we didn't do so I used Ryan Shrout, who's the editor-in-chief of PC Perspective. They've been building PCs and reviewing this stuff for years. So we went with his specs. We got a very nice Skylake processor, an i7-6700K, 4 gigahertz processor. He didn't think SLI would – that Oculus would benefit from SLI, and there'd be reasons not to do dual cards. So we just got a top-of-the-line titanium NVIDIA titanium card.
How much was that alone?
I don't – you know what? That's a good question. Probably 800, 700, 800 bucks, something like that.
Yeah. We try not to show the receipts to Leo.
Well, I know the total. I know the total. But it has a very nice half terabyte SSD on the PCI Express bus, very fast Samsung Evo 950, with two spinning drives in RAID 1 for speed. It's going to be just right for – and one of those nice new curved 34-inch displays, because even though you're on the VR, you still need a display, that kind of thing. It's nice.
All right.
Yeah.
The important part is the NVIDIA card, getting a good NVIDIA card.
Yeah, no, in fact, what I said to Ryan is, why don't we get the cheap one, the 970, the minimum, because everybody's saying that there's going to be this new Pascal platform from NVIDIA in the summer, and that this is going to be light years ahead, et cetera, et cetera. He said, yeah, maybe. Get it now. You got money. You can buy it again. You know.
What I should do is bring one of the $1,500 Oculus authorized PCs in, and we should see if
we compare them. Yeah, because you're telling me I'm wasting my money.
Well, you're not wasting your money if you're going to use it for other things, and obviously having all that fast I/O and a lot of I/O matters for other things, right? But if you just care about running Oculus, it's hard to tell the difference.
So. Yeah.
Well, it would be a fun comparison to do. You know, what's a $1,500 experience versus an ultimate experience?
Yeah. This Titan 2 is a pretty nice, sweet card. They're saying $950 now. Yeah, but it booted, and it's pretty, and we're going to put Windows on it, and I'm just going to play Minecraft all the time. So it doesn't really matter. We're running out of time because we've got to get going for TNT, which is up in minutes. Becky Worley is hosting today, which is really great news.
Becky.
Yay. But I will tell you I'll do a tip or something that tells you my mail workflow, because I think I finally got it in a way that it's really usable. None of this inbox zero BS. It's really more about filtering out the junk and sorting stuff so that you know which folder to look at first and that kind of thing. But I have a system. I have a system. And I'll talk about it maybe on the new screensavers if we have some time. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. Always a pleasure. Catch his great books, Geeks Bearing Gifts, Public Parts, all available on the Amazon, buzzmachine.com for the blog. We'll see you next week. Robert Scoble, congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure to see you. I'm sorry I missed your birthday party.
Yeah.
Lisa was sick as a dog, and I didn't want to leave her alone.
I owe you dinner.
Oh, I did. I bought tickets, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. I'll let you buy me
it was a fun party.
Ginger ale. It looked like it was an awesome party. I'm sorry I wasn't there. Yeah. Thank you so much. But anytime, Robert, you have a standing invitation.
Great to see you, Robert.
Thanks. Anytime.
Thanks, Jeff.
Love having you.
You're an icon, man.
Yeah. Both of you are. Stop it.
Yeah. You're an icon. No, you're an icon. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC on Twit. You can watch live. If you can't, though, don't worry. On-demand audio and video of all of our shows available at our website, in this case, twit.tv/twig, or use a podcatcher on your mobile. Because it's really an easy way to get every episode. You don't want to miss one. Or one of those nice, well-made, highly crafted Twit applications, which I can take no credit for. Our application is lost in the ether somewhere. It's our third-party developers who are doing such a good job, and we thank all of them. Just search for Twit on your favorite mobile device or desktop, and you'll find one or more. Apple TV, too. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.